1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock bands. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's the conclusion of 50 fabulous flute-filled years of Jethro Tull.
Let me bring you songs from the woods to make you feel much better than you could know.
Albums like Thick as a Brick and Passion Play, Songs from the Wood and so on, I mean, those are all very much band efforts, you know, not me at all. I mean, Thick as a Brick was really a group effort.
All I have left is a broken down Lincoln truck. Looks like my farm is a freeway.
Do you want something that is, you know, is an antidote to that fast food music? You know, we snack on music these days. We don't sit down to a banquet and take 2 hours over it. We tend to snack.
This is not love, this is not love, this is not love.
Hello, this is Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull in the studio.
The first decade of Jethro Tull's half century occupying that musical territory only big enough for itself, where ancient-sounding, heath-covered acoustic numbers combined with sprawling progressive rock fits neatly from the debut album This Was in 1968 to Heavy Horses 10 years later. Jethro Tull and its singer-songwriter-flautist Ian Anderson were fearless in those days, going to number one in sales with the impossible-to-market Thick as a Brick, brushing off the disastrous Passion Play, and coming back strong with 2 top 40 hits on the follow-up from War Child. Ian Anderson said that the whole approach by the people running the record companies back then was different.
Well, record companies back then were in a slightly different position. I mean, they were there to take chances on unusual things. Everybody was encouraged to do stuff that was a bit crazy, a bit different, a bit weird, and there were really no rules. So our record company were not only understanding, but I mean positively encouraging in terms of saying, hey, that's no problem, we'll just edit some bits, you know, top them and tail them and put them out to radio as kind of pieces that can be played. And in itself, it creates a talking point.
There's a haze on the skyline to wish me on my way. And there's a note on the telephone, some roses on a tree.
And the motorway stretching right out to us all. As I pull on my old wings, one wire duck on your wall. Isn't it just too damn real? One white duck on your wall. One duck on your wall.
I'll catch a ride on your violin, strung up on your bow. And I'll float on your melody, sing your chorus soft and low.
There's a picture view postcard to say that I called. You can see from the fireplace, so one quiet knock on your wall. Isn't it just too damn real? One white duck on your wall. One duck on your wall. One duck on your wall.
Peter and fly away, Paul. From the fingertip ledge of contentment, well, the long restless rustle of high-heel boots calls. And I'm probably bound to deceive you after all. Something must be wrong with me and my brain if I'm so patently unrewarding. But my dreams are for dreaming and best left that way. And my zero TO bar of 10 equals nothing at all. There's no double lock defense, there's no chain on my door. And I'm available for a consultation. But remember, your way in is also my way out. And love's fallen word is no compensation. Well, I'm the black ace dog handler, I'm a waiter on skates. So don't you jump to your foreskin conclusion, cause I'm up to my deaf ears in cold breakfast trays. To be clear before I can dine on your sweet Sunday lunch confusion.
Jethro Tull from 1975's Minstrel in the Gallery album, with One White Duck on Your Wall, included as one of the 50 for 50, chosen by Ian Anderson himself to commemorate the band's 50th anniversary, being celebrated now by a major North American tour.
I think what it's important to see what Aqualung is being part nostalgia for a lot of people, but it isn't nostalgia for me. I don't do it because it's like, hey, it's one of our, you know, great old songs that we kind of go out and just run through. You know, I mean, it's a song we play on stage because it's actually an important piece of music to me. And once in a while, you know, there's some kid in the audience, 17 years old or whatever, who for whom it becomes important, seeing it for the first time, or you know, if it's a new idea or something they're coping with. But I always believe that when people got old, they kind of changed, they became somebody else, you know. But I think these formative years, whatever they are, in my case when I was, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years, I mean, that was a lot of things went in then and they're still with me now, which is why I get very concerned and take very seriously what people of that age group, the way they see the band now, or the way that if I talk to them, what they... I mean, I take it very seriously because I realize that these can be very, very important years where a lot of the things that go in there, into the back of your head, or with you for the rest of your life.
Let me bring you songs from the wood to make you feel much better than you could know.
Better than you could
dust
know.
Dust you down from tip to toe.
Dust you down from tip to toe.
Show you how the garden grows.
Show you how the garden
Hold
grows.
Hold you steady as you go.
Hold steady as you
Join
go.
The chorus if you can. It'll make of you an honest man. Let me bring you love from the fields. Poppies red and roses filled with summer rain. To heal the wound and still the pain that threatens again and again. As we drag down every lover's lane,
life's long celebrations here. I'll toast you all in.
Let me bring you all things refined, galley hides, loot songs served in chilling ale. Greetings, well met fellow, hail. I am the wind to fill your sail. I am the frost to take your nail.
A singer of these ageless times, with kitchen pros and
just a rhyme.
Poppies red and roses filled with summer rain, to heal the wound and still the pain that threatens again and again. As we drag down every love and lane, life's long celebrations here. Our toast to all in penny
Anderson had used his decade of Jethro Tull's success to invest in an actual working farm west of London, and the experience influenced the 1977 hit album Songs from the Wood.
But you have to remember that it isn't just me, it's very easy because I'm the one who does most of the talking and I stand near the front of the stage. I mean, Jethro Tull has not been me plus a bunch of, you know, occasionally changing sort of backup musicians. I mean, it's always been a band, and the band identity has always come through very strongly in writing and rehearsing songs. I mean, I may write the lyrics and the tune, but the way they turn out as arrangements and the sound and the way they come across is always been, I wouldn't say always, but usually, certainly 80% of the time at least, is a band effort, you know? Okay. And the people in the band shape the music much more than I do. I mean, it's down to the people who are in there. And the band has gone through a lot of different qualities of sound, different sort of musical styles and, you know, musical emphasis in one direction or another as a result of the people who happen to be in the group at the time. I play my part. I go with the flow for the most part. I mean, there are some albums where I have been more dominating in the sense of doing the arrangements and really shaping the music in a much more, you know, selfish way, in the sense that I say, this is how I want it to sound, this is how it's going to be. Albums like Thick as a Brick and Passion Play, Songs from the Wood and so on, I mean, those are albums very much band efforts, you know, not me at all. I mean, Thick as a Brick was really a group effort, you know.
I see a dark sail on the horizon.
title song to The Broadsword and the Beast could have been the unofficial theme song to Game of Thrones, albeit written 30 years earlier. Jethro Tull founder Ian Anderson personally selected 50 songs from all 21 studio albums of their legendary career for a new three-disc collection, 50 for 50. It's available now at Amazon. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Ian Anderson for Jethro Tull's 50th Anniversary Part 2.
Hello, this is Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull in the studio.
Thanks, Ian. I'm Redbeard. Beginning in 1979 and continuing until the late 80s, Jethro Tull's fate would be quite unlike their first 10 years of solid success. Bass player John Glasscock died from heart surgery just 5 weeks after the 1979 album Stormwatch's release, a tough blow. And to add insult to injury, Stormwatch would be the first album since This Was not to make the U.S. Top 20 in sales. If there ever was a lyrical wordsmith who learned his trade in the widescreen, long-form cinematic tradition of the record album format and is ill-suited for the 99-cent iTunes world, it would be Ian Anderson of Jethro Tull.
If it's all too much for you, you'd rather sit down and watch The X Factor, be my guest. But on the other hand, if you want something that is, is an antidote to that fast food music that we tend to live amidst these days, then maybe this is the album for you. You can get your teeth into it. Well, if you still have any, that is. You know, you can just hit that rewind button that we've all got so used to. You know, we snack on music these days. We don't sit down to a banquet and take 2 hours over it. We tend to snack. And so I think it's a change in culture I have to recognize.
9 miles of two strand topped with barbed wire. Laid by the father for the son. Good shelter down there on the valley floor. Down by where the sweet stream runs. Now they might give me compensation. That's not what I'm chasing. I was a rich man before yesterday. Now all I've got is a check and a pickup truck. And I left my farm on the freeway. On the south side, silicon chip factory on the east, and the big roads pushing through along the valley floor, a machine boring six lanes at the very least. Now, they say they gave me compensation. That's not what I'm chasing. I was a rich man.
We'll be right back. God that told us what this old land was for. Wrote who turns the acre boy between the stones. This was no South Fork, it was no Ponderosa, but it was the place that I called home. They say they gave me compensation. Well, that's not what I'm chasing. I was a rich man before yesterday. What I want with $1 million and a pickup truck. When I left my farm under the freeway.
After an 8-year struggle, Jethro Tull had all the tumblers click on the 1987 album Crest of a Knave, containing Farm on the Freeway, a top 20 seller in the UK, number 32 in the US, and eventually winning a Grammy Award. That famous flute there now has an out-of-this-world story.
In 2010, I was approached by intermediaries who suggested that maybe one of my flutes might like to go into space.
No kidding.
And so Colonel Catherine Coleman, ex-US Air Force colonel, who was scheduled to fly on the International Space Station for 6 months, is also an amateur flute player, and she wanted to take one of my flutes up into space and play it. And I said, sure, okay. So we made contact, and I sent her a flute, and it duly blasted off from Baikonur on a Soyuz rocket cargo ship and was taken aboard the space station. So when she arrived for her tour of duty on a separate rocket, it was there waiting for her, and she had a few months to play with my flute, and in the nicest possible way, I hasten to add. So we actually did a space. We did a space duet when I was playing in Russia on, I think it was the 11th or 12th of March last year. It was the 50th anniversary of the first space flight by Yuri Gagarin, celebrate that, we did a concert where I did a duet live with Catherine Coleman from the space station, and we played a little flute thing together. Wow. With me on the stage in a Russian theater, and Colonel Coleman up there in space.
Oh, that's great.
In a market town, she fillets her soul and washes it down with sparkling wine. A nice girl, but a bad girl's better. Qualifies in both ways, to my mind. But now she's kissing Willie. She shows her leg, shows it damn well. Knows how to drive a man right back to being. She's a nice girl, but her bad girl's better. I can read it in her cheating eyes. I know that in a while, well, she'll be kissing Willie, my best friend Willie. We'll be right back.
Island in 1989 gave us Kissing Willie and gave Jethro Tull another top 20 seller in the UK. Even 10 years ago, Ian Anderson was fully aware that navigating Jethro Tull this far down the uncharted tributary of time was fraught with hidden hazards every step of the way.
It's 40 long years and a big change in society and culture and technology and communications and ethics and morality. You know, we are faced today with capitalism gone mad, where the disparity between the super rich, paying very often their much reduced tax rates by dint of huge and complex professional advisors' schemes, while the rest of us suffer in a relatively high tax regime, and we watch these folks taking obscene levels of bonus, which seem out of all proportion to being rewarded for ability and success. It's actually about personal greed at the expense of other people. And, you know, I think that's the reality of where we are today. We've also seen a couple more, to some people, misadventures in terms of the futility of war. To other people, it's defending an ideal, defending principles and a way of life and trying to democratize the other half of the planet that essentially have not been able to enjoy the freedoms we have in Western society. But regardless of your point of view, things have been going awfully wrong. That's a sad reality in an overpopulated planet, which is another thing I like to touch upon from time to time. You know, we're just not designed to have 7 billion people on planet Earth. You know, as an ecosphere, it is not designed to support. It will never support the kind of populations that are on the cards in the next 50 years. I think it is a different world today from a mere 40 years ago, and I'm, you know, sometimes painting that little picture.
Sure.
Sometimes in a humorous way, sometimes in a pretty despairing and dark kind of a way. But I try not to let it be one-sided. I try and see the light and the dark, the fun and the gloom, the happiness and the despair. I think that's a reflection itself of life as we know it.
Yeah.
You know, suffer, not in silence, but keep smiling.
There's a black cat down on the quayside. Ship's lights, green eyes glowing in the dark. Two young cops handing out a beating. Know how to hurt and leave no mark. We're down in the half-lit bar of the hotel. There's a call for the last round of the day. Push back the stool, take that elevator right. Fall in bed and kick my shoes away. Kick my shoes away. Kick my shoes away. Rocks on the road. Wild sound of the city. Hear a call for the young boys heading for a fight. Long distance telephone keeps ringing unengaged. Wonder who you're talking with tonight. Talking with tonight. Who you're talking with tonight. Rocks on the road. Tired coming wakes me in the morning.
The shower runs hot, runs cold, playing with me. I'm up for the downside, life's a bitch and all that stuff. So come and shake some apples from my tree. I have to pay for my minibar manners. Itemized phone bill overload. Well now, how about some heavy road? Move these rocks on the road. On the road. Rocks on the road. Crumbs on a breakfast table, and a million other little things to spoil my day. How about a little late music to chase it all away? To chase it all away. Black cat down on the quayside. Ships lie, its green eyes glowing in the dark. Two young cops handing out a beating. Know how to hurt and leave no mark. Yeah, down in the half the bar of the hotel. There's a call for the last round of the day. Push back the stove, take that elevator ride. Fall in bed and kick my shoes away. Kick my shoes away. Kick my shoes away. Rocks on the road. Kick my shoes away. Kick my shoes away. Rocks on the road.
Rocks on the Road from 1991's album Catfish Rising is one of the 50 from 50. 50 songs chosen by Ian Anderson from the 21 Jethro Tull studio albums to commemorate the band's half century of excellence. Now at Amazon. Still to come, a shocking revelation from Ian Anderson about his father's intolerance. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the best of Jethro Tull's 50 years, part 2.
Hi, this is Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull. You're in the studio.
Again, thank you. I'm Redbeard. Jethro Tull songwriter Ian Anderson never wrote Moon, June, Spoon lyrics from the beginning. So when many of the rock critics either attacked or ignored the band with the punk rock and post-punk trends, Anderson didn't get too bothered because, as it turns out, he'd been misunderstood and rejected before.
I also wanted to touch upon the nature of homelessness these days being a little different to how it was 40-odd years ago, because it's so often these days connected with the sex trade. It's so often connected with the complications of drug abuse. In this case, it is the sad tale of somebody spiraling into the homeless world, not directly as a result of, but alongside the rejection by parents for being gay. And my father, when I was young, I mean, I'm singing this with a little bit of personal experience and authority, my father hurt me a great deal by his condemnation of my femininity as a young boy. I mean, that's the way he saw it. It's just that I liked art. I liked drawing and painting. And I wasn't very keen on sports. I was quite good at sports, but I didn't really want to do it competitively and aggressively. So I think he just had it in his head that I was going to be a homosexual. And he
really
found that very, very difficult to cope with. Yeah. As an old-fashioned, rather puritanical Scottish father, he couldn't handle that idea.
Wow.
And I didn't, you know, I didn't think I was gay. We didn't use that word back then, but whatever it was, I didn't have any real attraction to men, boys, or anything else. I was perfectly aware that these things were around, but I didn't think that I just thought I want to have long hair and wear tight trousers and be a musician or a painter or do something a bit more artistic with my life. And he couldn't handle it. So he was rather cruel and aggressive to me in that way. And I know that could have easily driven me away from him and possibly even driven me into the very lifestyle that he was so fearful of my adopting.
Sure.
So, you know, as it turned out, I mean, a couple of years later, he found me lying on top of a rather attractive young lady with a skirt round her neck. But, you know, that strangely seemed to soothe him.
Look, Dad, no hands.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, at that point, he seemed to decide he quite liked me again. But
that's my boy.
Yeah. Well, I was only 11 at the time. No, I'm just kidding. I was actually, by then, I think I was probably about 16. I was about 16 at that moment. And I think he thought, oh, he's going to be all right after all. Oh. That's my boy. Yeah.
Images of summer's gone. Think I see us in these promenade days before we learned October's song. Out on the headland when gale whips tree, curious head bent to see. And how come you know better than me that this is not love? No, this is not love. This is not love. How come you know better than me? Well, how come you know better than me? So how come you know better than me that this is not love? This is not love.
on a broader sense, what you've been talking about here is tolerance. It's not a proclivity or a sexual orientation. We're talking about tolerance, which is much broader than.
We're talking about tolerance, and we're talking about respect.
Respect, very good.
We're talking about respect for cultures, belief, lifestyles that we find it difficult to relate to, whether it's a foreign national, whether it's some far-off country who have a totally different way of life.
Or religion. That's the big, that's the big one.
So there's nothing wrong with having a little tolerance and respect. We don't have to agree on everything. And you know, one of the delightful things about Homo sapiens as a species, you know, planet Earth as a home for this species is that we are all so incredibly different. That's what I think makes us really, really interesting. And, you know, we collectively seem hell-bent on making utter fools of ourselves in the cosmological, social, and cultural sense. If there's anybody out there to pay attention, they must think, oh, goodness me, they're at it again. Oh, look what they're doing this time. Oh, they're going off into Afghanistan. Oh, bless. You know, I mean, we probably look like a real bunch of twerps, a real bunch of idiots, but on the other hand, we have also got Shakespeare, we've got Mozart, we've got some pretty profound political people too, love them or loathe them. And it may seem like this is a complete contradiction, but to me it's not. I'm a great supporter of religion, religions plural, but let's just talk about the one that I tended to be culturally born into, which is that of Christianity, and particularly the non-Catholic form of Christianity. I'm a guy who these days, you know, is likely to be doing charity concerts for cathedrals and churches, not because I'm a Christian, but because I really appreciate the value culturally, architecturally, which is important to me, these wonderful buildings that we have, and they won't make any more of them, and the fact that in the spiritual sense, there is more of an upside than a downside in my slightly ever-changing view of it all. So I'm a supporter. I mean, I'm not just kind of just sitting on the fence saying, well, on balance, I guess I'm a little bit pro rather than anti. Not that. I am completely, really, not quite driven, but I'm a strong supporter of the idea of religious being encapsulated in that spiritual belief. And if you choose to do it through a set of rules and ultimately adherence to faith, that's fine by me. Just don't expect me to join in, because I don't have faith. I don't believe in an interventionist God who will answer prayers and stop this tsunami and let the earthquake over here happen instead. I don't believe in an interventionist supreme power or being. Nonetheless, I think of myself as a fairly spiritual person who defends the right of people to believe if they wish, and I defend the right of an atheist to say no, he doesn't. But nonetheless, on balance, I am someone who thinks not in terms of belief or faith, but in terms of probability. I think there is probably a God. So you can put me down as a supporter, even though I will continue to be occasionally outspoken about things that really make me angry. And one of those things made me angry just in the last few days is the proclamation of a number of people speaking out in quite vociferous and, I think, unhelpful terms against the idea of gay marriage and the freedoms of gays in society to be able to declare their love and their commitment to each other within a formal adoption of a marriage ceremony. I think on balance, you know, I'm on the side of the gay folks here. You know, it almost makes me want to be one of them, but I can't because I don't like playing sticky bottoms.
And finally, Ian Anderson reminds anyone reluctant to attend this 50th anniversary tour that you're never too old to rock and roll. He's just as old as you are. Bring your knee replacements, your hip replacements. Just tell the attendant when you go through security.
Let me do all the work of trying to be an entertaining character in my dotage as my eyesight fails, my teeth drop out, and what remains of my hair is increasingly likely to be found in the plug hole of the shower.
When you're falling awake and you take stock of the new day, and you hear your voice croak as you choke on what you need to say, don't you fret, don't you fear, I will give you good cheer. Life's a long song, life's a long song, life's a long song. If you wait, then you're playing a fool. As the verses unfold and your soul suffers the long day, and the 12 o'clock gloom spins the room, you struggle on your way. Well, don't you sigh, don't you cry, lick the dust from your eye. Life's a long song, life's a long song, life's a long song. We will meet in the sweet light of dawn, as the Baker Street train spills your pain all over your new dress, and the symphony sounds underground, but you and the dew press. Well, don't you squeal as the heel grinds you under the wheel. Life's a long song, life's a long song, life's a long song, but the tune ends too soon for a song.
I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest and congratulating Ian Anderson. In the Studio was written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.